Okay. What are you looking at?
Audio Technica.
Huh?
Are these condenser mics?
I don't know. You ordered them. All right. What are we doing here?
I don't know. Wait. Is this not couples therapy?
It could be a form of therapy. But that's what we're going to go with, because it
could be a form of divorce.
that or the other.
If I secretly say all of a sudden, I'm like, yeah, I sometimes have dreams of killing you. It's like, is that weird? And it's like, well, let's have another discussion after hours, maybe.
Well, I thought that this was a great way for us to connect on a more personal level because, you know, I love true crime.
More personal level.
I love true crime, but this is, you know, date night. We can get together, record, talk some true crime. You probably hate it. I'm loving it secretly. But welcome to Crime Poppers officially. This is episode one, and this is so weird looking across at the table
I'm
at
not
you.
Alex.
And for those of you who might be new, who don't know, my name is Natalie, and I am now a second time podcast producer, I guess, self-claimed podcast producer. I have a podcast Here for Her with my co-host Alex, and you can find us over there weekly. Every Monday we put out new episodes, and it's pretty badass. We've been doing that for over a year. And then one day I was thinking, you know, I love true crime, and one day I am going to start a true crime podcast. I don't care who it's with. I could do it by myself. And I was talking to Alex, and she was like, there is no way in hell I am doing true crime with you. You can just get that out of your head. And then so I was driving one day, and I was like, who am I going to start this true crime podcast with? And none other than my other half popped into my
desperation.
And I thought, you know what? This is good because A, I love true crime and I love talking about true crime. And B, you love talking.
I'm a little bit of an expert.
So my husband, none other than Adam Gleba, is a professional yapper and he will talk my ear off. And I thought, ding, 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 this is perfect. This is a perfect fit because I know that me getting out my true crime passion and you debriefing the true crime is just going to be amazing. And I'm excited for our episodes. So tell us a bit about yourself, Adam. People don't know. People probably know me, but they don't know you. So what's up? What are your passions?
Well, let's start from the beginning. I'm just kidding. My name's Adam. I'm 37 years old, male. Identify as a male. I'm semi-retired energy nuclear power salesperson.
Recently turned real estate junkie.
Yes. So I'm into rentals and
which is great because a lot of the crime that we're going to cover is going to be
retirement, by the way.
Talking about crime scenes and home invasions. So you'll be able to pick apart some cases, I'm sure.
Sure.
Why do you think I wanted to start a true crime podcast?
Well, I just wanted to go through my biography here. Oh. If that was okay. So I used to be a professional mountain biker. I was actually ranked second in Canada for cross-country mountain biking in my youth days. What else? I've been in sales for 17 years straight. And
hence the talking addiction.
Yes. Direct sales for majority of it. I was very successful in that. And now I'm becoming a bit of trade person in a way, doing renos and multifamily residential. So
it's been quite a year. This has been a transitionary year for not only our personal lives. I mean, obviously the whole world is going through a transition, but there's been a lot of cool things that have happened over the last year with us and our little fam jam. We've got two little kiddos, which is also going to make some of these cases really hard to talk about because
I don't normally do true crime stuff because I just can't deal
with it. It's kind of like you have to disassociate yourself from the crime, but which is really hard for you to do because you have a hard time like not getting into stuff.
Like when I watch movies or anything, like people can be talking to me, like, I completely zone out and I almost act like I'm the character.
Yeah.
Like, I get so deep into stuff. Like, if something's sweaty, like, I get sweaty.
Mm-hmm. Like, so you I have really a weird,
like, I don't know if that's imagination or if it's just, I get really focused.
Yeah, which is not a bad thing. I mean, which also makes you a very emotional, caring, genuine, you know, loving person. So it's good. It's good. I think that, for me, this is how I've explored and researched the true crime industry, because like you always wonder, like, what is it with true crime that people like get all like interested in? But it's described as a roller coaster. So it's the same thrill that you get from being on a roller coaster. It's this like sense of,
but off of somebody else's death. See, that's sort of thing. Like, I don't care. See, okay, whatever.
Just stick with me. And okay. I think a lot of the reasons why true crime is so important, and a lot of these podcasts have been helping families and covering, like, sharing family stories and getting the word out there. There have been podcast episodes that have helped solve crimes.
True.
So,
but that's majority of people aren't into it to help solve crimes. They're just, they love the, I don't know,
the thrill.
The thrill. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Is that what you call it?
It's a thrill. It is. It's the same sort of thrill that you get from, you know, I don't know, walking through a haunted house, I guess. Maybe this is just me. I've loved true crime ever since I can remember. I remember watching true crime and like Dateline when I was a kid, and watching horror movies and just like loving the thrill of it all. And then I met you, and I remember us going to watch, I think it was Saw. I don't know. It was some scary movie in theaters. Like, it was one of our very first dates, and I'm like all into it. I'm like barely blinking, and you are jumping out of your seat, like physically getting air off your seat. And I remember thinking, oh my God. And you probably thought I was a psychopath because I loved all these like scary, deep, dark movies. And you're like, how do you enjoy watching this shit? You know? So here we are. I'm so excited, and today I've done some research into a case that, for me, I've done a lot of research on cases. I've followed, watched, listened to so many. You name a serial killer, I've probably heard of it, him or her, but most likely him, because the ratio from male to female murderers is like huge. And this particular case that I'm about to tell you has blown my mind with twists and turns that no one saw coming. So with that being said, let's pop this case open, shall
we? Ooh, I like it.
This is the murder of Christy Merak. Okay, so this case dates back to December 21st of 1992. Like, that, thinking back to 1992, it might not seem like that long ago, but I was 5 years old in 1992. And, I mean, I was probably just starting to watch True Crime. No, I'm just kidding. But thinking now, Amelia's 5 years old.
Wow.
And so this is an older case, but it's one that shockingly only just got resolved. So in the last few years, this case just blew up, and you'll see how this unfolds. But
I wanna know.
So Christy Merak, who was 25 years old at the time, was an elementary school teacher in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Never been to Pennsylvania, don't know much about it, but apparently it's like a, so I think of like, we have a Mennonite city here close by our town. They say it was a very like Amish country type.
Pennsylvania Dutch is actually the correct terminology for a lot of the Amish here, what the language they speak, like the dialect.
The what?
It's called Pennsylvania Dutch. A lot of them.
How do you
here,
know this?
I don't know. I just know stuff, but, a lot of the stuff. Mennonites around here, there's a few different orders, Old Order, New Order, David Martin's, but they are all basically originated from majority of them anyways, Pennsylvania.
That is so.
So they call it Pennsylvania Dutch. That's a certain dialect.
Okay, so the idea here is
I grew up in
that
Hatterburg, which is kind of a rural.
See, you're already bringing so much senseless knowledge to
this. I wouldn't get far ahead on
just
that.
<kidding. No, but the idea is that, like, this is a very, very low crime
for sure
city. There's rarely ever murders. Mm-hmm. So it's considered to be a safe place to live.
They're very religious.
Yeah. And I mean,
their whole life is based around their religion. Like, they're hardcore. You know?
Yeah. There's not, I, from the research that I've done, there wasn't a lot of party life going on, if you could say. I mean, there were definitely bars and gatherings, sure. But especially at the time, it wasn't really considered a high crime rate spot to live. So Christy always wanted to be a teacher. It was said that she, even growing up, would get home from school and want to play teacher. She was always had that as a dream to become a teacher in her future. And she was known when she graduated from teacher's college to be that poster board teacher. She loved her job. She was good at it. People got along with her. And just the energy from Christy was positive. People were drawn to her. You know, kind of like me, like people are like drawn.
I am. I'm sorry, just staring at you.
I'm just kidding. But all her students loved her dearly, and she cared about her students dearly. In fact, she was writing notes to her students the night before, because this was around Christmas holidays. So she was writing them notes. She was wrapping them a book. And, she was getting ready for the holidays.
Some of the last things she did was actually writing like personal notes.
Yeah. Like for her kids in her class. Like this is, I mean, thinking so these days.
Going outside of the box and actually like doing extra.
Yeah, I never got a fucking present from any of my teachers growing up. No, so it just
didn't like me.
In fact, my third grade teacher harassed me. What?
Maybe notes to my parents, actually.
Yeah. Notes to your parents. Yeah, that's
we're concerned.
So she had a book. Each child was getting Miracles on Maple Street. That's the book that she had personally picked out for them. She had candy canes. She was getting ready. So this was a Sunday night before she got buckled in for the night for the next day. It was a Monday, and she was getting ready for the Christmas holidays. And this was the final day of class before Christmas break. So this is Sunday night. She's getting ready, and Monday morning rolls around, and Christy wakes up early morning to get ready for the day, ready to head out the door. She's got her jacket on. She's got her gloves on. And I think one important thing to note here at this point is that Christy had a roommate. So her and her roommate, Mary Lesko, rented this townhouse together.
She did it.
She did it?
Yep.
We'll see. Mary is the roommate, and she always left before Christy in the morning. So Mary left the townhouse around 7:30 in the morning. It's not really exact.
She's gone.
But that's our time frame. Yeah. Okay. She leaves the house. And so that the suspicions are, as you'll see, that Christy was the target of this vicious attack by the killer, because they would have waited for Christy to be left alone to, you know, get in there and do whatever.
She was murdered in her house.
She was murdered in the morning. Okay. Like a Monday morning. This is
like, that's definitely premeditated, hardcore, like
people planned out.
Yeah. Like people don't
morning
to wake up in the morning. Like, you know, you're lazy.
yeah.
And like, to be like, yeah, I'm go. Like, let's do this. Like, but it's more of like a nighttime, like, you know, you're like, I don't know.
Yeah. No, when most murders
you're more
happen,
aggressive, I
is
think.
Like at night when it's harder to
you got a good
see
night's sleep.
Suspects.
You're not feeling like, hey, I want to kill somebody. You're
it's
like,
just
hey,
not
I
like
feel
a
good.
Morning
you know?
Thing you do.
No.
You know, like,
no.
You have your cup of coffee. It's like,
yeah.
You're going to be.
That's why you have coffee, unless maybe that was she couldn't get coffee. And I mean, that could throw you off, but
who knows? But it just goes to show that this killer was brazen, you know?
Yeah,
like,
that's definitely planned.
Yeah. And just so sinister to do such a vicious thing, as you'll see. So,
maybe, hold on, maybe the roommate hated how much or how noisy she was.
Or stole her shirt or stole her shoes. Not happening. So they wait for the roommate to leave before attacking Christy, knowing that she would have been left alone. And it's at this point suspected that this person knows Christy of some way. They maybe know each other, but it's not for sure. Now, here's where things get a little bit suspicious. So Christy was always known for being very tactful. She was never late for work. In fact, she was always early. So she would always show up in the morning around 8 o'clock to school before class even started. But when 8:30 a.m. rolls around, her students are waiting in the classroom, but Christy doesn't show up. And they're thinking, oh, shit, which is not like her. So I always wonder what I would be doing as a student in that class. You're waiting for your teacher. They're probably checked out on holiday mode because you're thinking this is Christmas break, right? But this day and age, they probably be doing TikToks or something.
Yeah, definitely.
They probably be doing TikToks. I don't know. I probably would have been trading pogs and doing hangman at that point in 1992. So anyways, the principal, Harry Goodman, he's an important role in this case. Hmm. So Harry Goodman immediately knows that something's up because this is not like Christy to be even 5 minutes late to work, right, let alone not show up by 9 o'clock. So 9 o'clock rolls around and I always hear about cases how there's always these heroes that like act fast when they notice something's up and they act immediately. And that's just what Harry Goodman did. He picked up the phone, called Christy 5 times and no answer. And he calls her family and they were just as clueless as him. They're like, okay, we haven't talked to Christy. We haven't heard anything. They tried calling her apartment and nothing. So he's like, okay, this shit's cray. I'm just going to hop in my car, drive over to her house. Wow. And maybe break down. Maybe she's broken down on the side of the road, right? He's expecting he's going to hop in his car and start driving and be like, oh, she, you know, got a flat tire or something, right? So he's expecting to like maybe see her along the way.
Most principals wouldn't do that, but in that more, was this like a rural town or was this in a city?
There's like a city part to it, like a main city area where the school is, but I think she kind of just lived on the outskirts. They said that her backyard was like kind of Farmville, like there were cows and horses. I'm like, what are the other animals? Horses. In the backyard. So she, you know, she, livestock. it was kind of like where I grew up, you know?
Okay.
But later we'll see how this decision matters in the case. So the principal hops in his car. It is kind of weird. Like he hops in his car and drives to her house. Apparently it was just a few minutes away. So he pulls up and immediately was thinking, oh shit. Her car is still in the driveway. It's iced over. There's no indication that her car had ever been started. And he kind of sees that her front door is open a bit.
Footprints. Because if it's, so this is winter.
Iced over. Right. But is there snow in Pennsylvania?
Of course. Absolutely.
Because I remember looking at the videos back from when they had yellow tape and it was live in the news. There was no snow.
Well, I mean, you can still be in the winter and
right, because her car was iced over, so that makes sense.
Well, I'm just going by that, but no, if like it's actually pretty much in line with Ontario here.
Okay, so they get snow and it's cold.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there was no snow at the time, which would have been good. Like, I mean, it would have been helpful because you're exactly right. I like you're thinking already, sir. You look for footprints, right? Or even tire tracks is also another thing. Absolutely. When doing investigations.
It's a good thing about winter.
What would you do in this situation? You pull up to Christy's apartment. You see that her car is there. Can you imagine being that principal? What would you do? What would your first instinct be to do in this case?
I mean, maybe just she slept in. Maybe, you know, her alarm, battery, whatever, something, you know. It can happen once in a while, even with someone that's punctual. But if you notice that the door is slowly open, then that would obviously make me want to call the police.
Would you actually go inside and look?
Well, if the door is cracked, then I think you're kind of allowed to like obviously knock loudly and even open it a bit and just yell out, hey, you know,
right,
are you okay? It's, you know, identify yourself and just say like, you know, are you home? Whatever. Mm-hmm. If the door is closed, it's not, I don't think you're allowed to open it. I mean, technically, as long as you're not breaking in, if a door is open, you can actually walk, like open it, I think, and you wouldn't get charged.
Right.
I remember that rule. Like, I remember hearing one way back in the day. Like, if a burglar said that the door was actually unlocked and they just walked in, they just played off like, oh, sorry, I thought it was my friend's house. You know, but they can actually get charged because it was actually not locked. Mm-hmm. So it's not actually like a break-in.
Well, I've even heard situations where there's like a burglar And I think this is tort law. I remember reading this one time. But anyways, if there's a burglar and they say jump through one of your windows because it was unlocked, they jump through your window and you've got like a bear trap on the floor and they jump on it.
Trouble.
Yeah, you can get charged. Isn't that fucked? Like what? Anyway, so that's just what Harry Goodman did. He walks inside Christie's front door and sees her on the floor.
Oh, damn.
Bloodied and badly beaten. And he immediately freaks out, goes to neighboring...
Because back then they might not have had cell phones.
No, he didn't have a cell phone.
Right.
So he ran to the neighbors and immediately called 911. And I tried to locate the 911 call because I feel like it gets you really into the case when you're able to hear like that. But there was no 911 call, I guess, recorded or available to the public. So I wasn't able to grab it. But I promise there are cases where I'm going to have 911 calls.
Yeah, those are the best.
Yeah. So he's freaking out. He is almost certain that she is not alive. So this is awful. I mean, this poor 25-year-old teacher, like such a sweetheart, you know, good person, who would ever want to harm her in any way? So the police show up and the scene is just vicious. There is blood everywhere and they notice a wooden cutting board that is suspected to be the murder weapon, even though there were clear...
So it's like blunt force. Mm-hmm. Style,
the autopsy later confirmed that she was strangled. So she was strangled, beaten with the cutting board that was on their front, like that it was on counter, and she was also sexually assaulted. Like,
so it doesn't seem that premeditated, because I'm pretty sure if I'm planning to murder someone, I'm not going to be like, you know what, I'm just going to wing it. Just going to find a cutting board or anything. Like, nobody actually plans to kill anyone with a cutting board. Okay. Like, that's not a thing.
Oh my God.
So like, I don't think I would be like, yeah, I'm going to use the shit out of this cutting board on her. Like, fuck knives. I'm going to use cutting boards. Like, how fucked up is that?
That is so true.
It's like, there's like you're playing a video game and it's like achievement unlocked. Use a cutting board to kill someone. You know what I mean? Or like there's some random, like, I don't know, like, you know, one day it's like kill someone with a toothbrush. Like, fuck, that's hard. Like, yeah, it's a higher achievement level. You get more coin or something, you know, like it's one of those things. So, like, yeah, I don't think that would be, like, that's more of on the whim. Like, or maybe, I don't know, he or she probably wanted to kill her, and maybe, like, that something happened with whatever.
But that is so true. Imagine
like
how
a gun malfunctioned
ballsy.
Or something, and then it's like, oh, shit, my gun's not working, it jammed. And then you gotta, like, try to find something else to, like,
but that's ballsy. Showing up to do something like this and not having
any idea.
I'm gonna
strangle somebody, like, unless it's, like, someone really personal, like, you actually want to cause like more, they always, what do they say about that? I don't listen to this stuff much, but I just know like when it's more of a crime of passion, then people want more of that raunchy,
right.
You know, like then I want to see
vicious.
Your like the life like drain
well,
out
well
it's
of her. Like if someone ever hurt your kids, I feel like you could get into that mindset of like, you know,
sure,
game on, motherfucker.
Yeah. But me personally, I get blood work done and I pass out. I can't do blood.
It's so true. You're such a puss.
I
with
am.
Blood work.
Like, I'm horrible.
You would not be
a good
killer.
Out of bad experience, but anyway.
No. Okay. So, back to the case. Poor Christie. This is such a sin. The immediately call. So, the police show up. You know, there's fluids everywhere. So, they immediately call.
I hate that term, fluids.
Fluids. Well, because she was sexually assaulted, right? So...
bad
visual.
Yeah.
So they immediately call the roommate Mary. As you remember, she would have left for work, and they call her back to come back to the house to help identify what could have been out of place when she left. So, you know, it was there, and so there was
Mary realized that. This chick didn't put the cutting board back, and she's like, what the fuck? You bitch. Keep telling you, put the cutting board back. And then there you go. Boom.
Man, poor Mary gets to the house, and she's not prepared for what – they didn't tell her anything.
Oh, wow.
So she gets there not prepared for what's happening, but they want her to identify anything that's out of place, right? Mm. And she did notice that there was a foot scuff. There was a shoe scuff because Mary had her shoes on. Or sorry, not Mary. Christie had her shoes on to leave, right? There was a scuff high up on the wall, so they're thinking that there was a bit of a struggle.
Hence the choking. Yeah, your feet would be
kind of kicking around. And just the timing of this whole attack is insane because the killer literally had one calculated hour to commit this murder. She was murdered sometime between 7:30 to 9 a.m. So, you know, somewhere between an hour and a half. Mm. So this killer had balls, right, to do something and get away with it.
Right.
So Mary, she skipped out like right at the nick of time because she could have been victim to this as well. Like, who knows what would have happened? I mean, perhaps the killer was around the corner and made sure that she left, but who knows? So Mary's freaking out a little bit, and she actually reported in a Dateline interview that she had forgotten her lunch at home that day, and she almost went back for it, but ended up saying fuck it because she was already too far.
Good thing.
Yeah, like, but also maybe not because maybe she could have saved her friend's life. Like, true. But that could like really weigh on your conscience too, imagine.
Yeah.
So they ended up taking a bunch of evidence from the scene. They took a piece of the carpet that was blood. They thought that maybe there could be some hair follicles, some fluids. They weren't sure. And thinking back, like, this is 1992, right? So DNA was a thing, but it wasn't like
what is today.
As advanced as it is today. So, you know, there were some fingerprints and DNA that was collected, but it didn't match anything that they had on file at the time. Right. So they input any sort of DNA into this system called CODIS, which I'm sure you'll start hearing a lot, but they put it into CODIS, and this particular killer had not been filed for any previous cases, right? So they didn't have any DNA to go off of whatsoever. It was just this Joe Blow at this time.
John Doe.
What did I say?
Joe Blow.
Joe Blow.
Same thing, you know.
Tomato, tomato.
If there is any Joe Blows out there, sorry.
There probably is Joe Blow. So they had no idea who this person was that committed this violent act. And although there were some witnesses that gave description of suspects, you know, they saw someone walking down the street afterwards, gave a description. And they also thought that they saw a white car thought to be a Toyota parked in front of the house, at that time, but no one ever found a match or a suspected match for this killer. Back during this, when this was happening. And I think they interviewed, I think they said over 1600 people for this case and took DNA from 60 people. So they thought like, this is just it. This person literally up and vanished. Mm. And they had questioned at the time that it might have been one of Christie's ex-boyfriends.
Always, yeah.
Yeah. So Dagger, this guy, he went by the name Dagger.
Oh, that was him. Fuck, man.
You think this is the guy?
Well, it's either that or Knife, you know? Like, I mean, Jesus, Dagger. Guy's name is fucking
I know, awful. Dagger. Like, awful name for a situation where you're a suspected killer. So they had actually broken up 2 days before the murder.
Well, I mean, wow. Okay.
So they broke up.
He just jumped to my number one.
He was 20-some-odd years older than Christie, so he was older, and he... She just didn't feel like it. She saw a future with him. Right, he didn't want to get married.
20 years sounds like more of a, I don't know, what do you call that?
A sugar daddy?
Possibly. Or just, you know, a more of a emotional, you know.
Just kind of a, well, it turns out that he was actually married.
That's what I mean. Like, it was more of a, I don't know.
Like a side chick?
Kind of. Yeah, flingy type such scenario, whether it's money or it's whatever. But it's just not something that long-term typically lasts.
Yeah, no, I agree. And at first I was like, oh shit, like they got their guy, right? But
typically anyway.
This same, okay, so what happens is...
Oh yeah, so like basically they break up and then somehow the guy wants to get rid of the evidence, aka her, of like, you know, maybe she said like, I'm going to wreck your marriage. I'm going to tell her, who knows? Like, things usually end poorly.
And you know what? This always has happened.
Right?
There
or
are
it's
so many cases.
Blackmail, maybe. Maybe it's like, I don't know who broke up. Does it say who broke up with who?
She broke up with him.
She broke up with him. Yeah. Well, even more reason why he would be pissed.
Exactly.
Right? Like, maybe she said like, I want you to, you know, leave your wife and blah, blah, blah. And then maybe he already had that discussion. Like, who knows? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, boom, she calls it off. And now he's left like with no one or I don't know what the scenario is, but I mean, my goodness.
All I can say is it did not look good for Mr. Dagger.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
So someone walks into the school.
This is interesting, though.
A few days after Christy was married, or married, a few days after Christy was murdered, someone walks
Same
into...
Thing. What? Go ahead.
Someone walks into
your
her...
single life is murdered, and now you start a new life as married.
Touche. So someone walks into her school where she used to teach a few days after she's been murdered, okay? Mm-hmm. And the janitor sees this guy walk in asking for Christy. Mm-hmm. And the janitor's like...
Not something murderers do. That'd be pretty heat, but anyway.
Okay, good point. Valid point. The janitor's like, she died a few days ago, right? Because he's asking for Christy. And they're like, this is a small town. How the hell did you not hear that Christy was murdered?
Right.
You're walking in here asking
for her. Unless he's like trying to act like, oh, what? What happened? Like,
well, sometimes they say killers are ballsy like that.
Yeah,
and
they
actually
want to act helpful.
Yeah, they act helpful. Yeah, they show up at vigils. They show up at the funerals. Right. Like, this happens.
Right.
So... turns out that that was Dagger that actually came into the school to check. You know, he had no idea. He didn't hear, I don't know, like whatever happened.
Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious.
However, I love it. However, he had a valid alibi. He was in Virginia at the time, and there was plenty of evidence to support that. And they also tested his DNA to the DNA that was at the crime scene, and it didn't match. So he was checked off the list. Now, jumping back, looking still a few days before she was murdered, her and her friends had went out to the club on the Saturday night before. So you're thinking she got married. You know, she got married. She got murdered on the Monday morning.
Right. What happened at the club?
Well.
That could be.
This is kind of a key point here because her friends had speculated, you know, while they were being interviewed by the cops that maybe it was someone she met that night or, you know, her friends recalled her saying something kind of harsh to a guy that was talking to her that night. And so they look at potential people that she would have ran into there, but nothing ever panned out, nothing that they could really gain as valuable insight into this case. So they then, out of nowhere, apparently look back at the principal, Harry Goodman. They're like, they're just trying to find anything to help with like solving this case, right? And I feel like when cases get to a point where there are no like clear suspects, they're like, okay, we're gonna look at everyone.
Sure.
So
you never know.
So they call back in Harry Goodman. They're like, can we have some DNA? He was fully cooperative. He even took a lie detector test. He gave DNA and it didn't match. So
I thought you were going to say like it matched. I was like, you built this lead up. It's like, I went back and guess what they did? Like what?
No. No.
Okay.
Trust me. This case is crazy. I'm taking you all over the place, but just you wait. You have no idea.
Right. Giddy up.
Fast forward 2 decades.
Okay. So nothing happened for 20 years.
Correct.
Okay.
Let that sink in for a second. This case went cold. There were no leads, but however, and this is where if there's a lesson to anyone listening who will, you know, who may have the unfortunate situation of dealing with a homicide or a family death or anything of the sorts, that this is an important reminder that you have to advocate for your own family members and for what you believe in and your rights. So Christy's brother, I believe his name was Vince, would not let this go. His mom, so Christy's mom passed away a year after her murder, I think from cancer. So she never got to see how this played out, you know, who actually was the killer. Which apparently
it's always the case, though. It's always a family member that just like won't let it go.
Won't let it go.
It's
her
that
brother.
Squeaky wheel and just keeps like
but
grinding
had that
everyone.
Not been the case, this wouldn't have been solved.
Yeah, and that's happened so often. Like it's always that pressure, you know, because detectives just like okay, like next. Like,
yeah, exactly.
As much as they care, like whatever, they got other, you know,
which is right, like understandable, right? Like they have a job to do also, and you know. It seems from all the research that I've done that they tried so hard. I mean, interviewing 1,600 people.
I mean, that seems a little bit, I feel like they probably juiced that, like, you know, like walk into a classroom. Hey, anyone see anything? No? Okay, cool. There's 30 we add to the list. Like, yeah, come on.
I know. It is true. But Vince would not let this, he just felt like there was justice to be paid here. And looking back into my own personal relation to a family member that has passed away, like unexpectedly and somewhat questionable, my brother, which we can get into a whole nother story at a later time. But just, I feel like there could be more questions asked. And I think Vince did a really great job in keeping her memory alive and pushing this story forward. So now we're in 2016 when the Lancaster DA's office catches wind of this new DNA testing method called genetic phenotyping by a company called Parabon. So I'm guessing you don't know what genetic phenotyping is.
No.
Okay. Something I know Parabon, that you don't.
Is that, like, you know, you have like a, I don't know, like a cosmetic product that's like has no parabons in it?
Parabens. Yeah. Okay. Kind of. No. So essentially what they do is they take DNA and they plop it into this testing machine, and hocus pocus, abracadabra, out pops a composite sketch of what a person can look like, down to their hair color, their eye color, damn, their skin color.
That's crazy.
Pardon the fuck me. Can you even believe, like...
Okay, so I'm going to take a shot at it here. Whatever that came up with, it was something kind of unique that kind of narrowed it down. Yes?
No.
No.
Well, okay, so I don't know. You be the judge. I'll show you the picture in a minute.
It's but... like, you know, African-American mixed with like Asian and... No.
But that could be the case.
I know who that is.
They take DNA, okay, right? And they can come out with specific images of what someone, what that genetic makeup might look like.
Cool.
And I'm going to pull up the picture for you and show you what they came out with.
Wait, it actually has like, it's not just like fill in the blank. It's actually like a picture.
It's a picture.
Give me a break.
Yeah.
What is it? It's going to be like Charlie Brown or something. You can't fucking do that, man. Does DNA have like a face?
Okay, so here's the picture. So I'm going to show Adam.
Oh, come on. Where's the DNA for cheekbones? Like, you know what I mean? Does it make any sense? Where's the hair? Oh, yeah. Look, it has that hairline in there. Well, maybe actually extra. Anyways, I call bullshit, but whatever. You can move on with your...
Okay, so look at this.
Okay. Okay, like that looks like every other white kid.
That's what I'm saying.
Whoa, wait. Go back. That looks like Simon Cowell a little bit.
Okay. I'm so glad that you said that because...
Literally.
Because, I mean, this is very, very basic, right? Well, I mean,
obviously.
And like I feel like there could be situations where...
But wait, does it show kind of age?
They do. So if you look at the pictures, it shows what someone would, what this person would have looked like at 24 years old at the time of the murder.
It can do literally cheekbones, but it can't break down a rough, like within 5 year age.
Well, he ages. See, there's three images there. One when the person was 20, 30, and 50.
Shouldn't it just know that?
Well,
okay,
it should, but it's also wanting to show people what the killer looked like at the time of the murder, right? This is 20 some odd years.
Right, I get it.
Yeah.
20 years.
But yes, also, like, okay, they can do this kind of shit, but they can't cure cancer. Yeah, like,
maybe
what the
they can.
That's what I'm saying.
Drug companies. I don't know.
I digress. Okay. Yeah. So this is where the case goes fucking nutty. So they're thinking, okay, great. We've got some composite sketches of what our perp might look like. Mm-hmm. Perp. You know what perp is, right? Yeah,
perpetrator.
Okay.
Got it.
I feel like I'll use that word a lot because it's like all over the crime industry, the crime stories. So deep down, I mean, if you look at the photos, I know like a minimum two dudes that could look like this person.
Right.
You know, one being you. Just kidding. Mm. But it doesn't give them a whole lot to work with, right? It's like, okay, this white male with dark hair, you know, it could be anyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then, hashtag but then. In May 2018, the same company that creates these composite sketches, Parabon, which is the company that generated these DNA matches, uploads the DNA profile of the killer to one of those ancestry DNA banks to see if there's a hit.
Mm.
And wouldn't you know, it matches to the relative of the killer, his half brother.
No kidding.
So, like, you know, like ancestry DNA, like, yeah, all these GD doing matches.
That, but maybe I shouldn't.
But, like, okay, so that's insane. Yeah. Also, like, there's a whole other layer to unpack there with how these ancestry DNA.
Yeah, you
like,
think it's completely private. Yeah. You know? Does it? Do now they know have, that it really is linked?
Like, I'm sure there's one of those check boxes that no one reads that you're right. checking off. Your DNA can be
or
matched
just,
with
it's in the fine print. Like,
yeah,
maybe ancestry really is just a police.
Right.
Like, you know, them making it easier for themselves. Like one of those things. Maybe it's just like a whole cover.
Yo, I have questions.
Yeah.
So they have now a visual composite of what this person looks like. And they're like, we're just going to run it by this DNA bank and see if it matches. And sure enough, it matches a half brother. So this half brother, if that half brother wouldn't have uploaded his DNA to this website to like track his ancestry, because this is like building up your family tree. This is a completely like, it's a thing that you
like
do.
Luxury item.
Yeah. It's like such a random thing.
Yeah, it's like an almost entertainment in a way. Maybe
but
not
if,
entertainment.
If that half brother wouldn't have done this, then this killer potentially could have never been found.
Right.
So they trace the DNA back to a guy named Raymond Rowe, a 24-year-old disc jockey. At the time.
Ooh, he was up in the club at the time.
And he lived just 4 miles from Christy at the time of the murder. So you'd think that this was a slam dunk,
arrest
right?
that man.
You'd think it was a slam dunk. And I mean, did have his DNA.
Right.
Because to confirm that this was their guy, though, they had to confirm his identity and the DNA and compare it against the DNA that they had saved from the crime scene back in 1992. Remember, they took pieces of the carpet, blood splatter, semen. And they just didn't think, like, knocking on Raymond Rowe's door that he was going to willingly provide his DNA. So they actually went undercover and traced him down and figured out that he was going to be DJing at a local school, at a local school dance. He's 50 at this point, keep in mind. So
she's a school teacher with access to young children.
Correct. But he's also 50 at the time, still DJing school dances.
How old is she again?
She was 25 at the time of the murder. Yeah.
Wow. Half her age.
Yeah.
And he's DJing.
He's still DJing at 50.
Must be
now
pretty
he's
cool.
he there has been more time passed since the death than Christy had actually been alive.
Right. So at the time he was 30 then. Is that what you're saying?
Well, he was 24 at the time of the murder.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But all I'm saying is like this guy's a loser. Right. I mean, clearly. Anyways, so they go undercover and at the end of the night when he was done.
No offense to all those other people that are 50 and DJs. Just gotta, we gotta keep, you know, politically correct here.
They retrieve a water bottle and a piece of gum that Raymond had thrown out at the end
so
of the
it's
night.
Like an illegal access to DNA kind of
well,
thing.
Well, I don't, like, I think
you don't
it's
say
like,
this call's being recorded. You can't actually use it or something. One of those.
Well, I think there are nuances to that, but
sure. Like murder. Yeah. Okay. Go.
They tested the DNA that they collected that night, and it was a match to the same DNA that was at the crime scene on December 21st, 1992.
But he's not the one that did it because you said something gets crazy, so.
No, well, that was the crazy part, is that he got away for so long, and that this whole story just went all over the place. And
so
the
he
fact
did,
that
he's
they,
the one that did it.
He's the one that did it, yeah. Oh. His DNA matched. Okay. You're so let down. I was like, this is such a good story. So the only offense that this dude, because if you remember, they tested his DNA back in 1991, they didn't, or 1992, and it didn't match anything. There was no previous criminal activity.
Right.
He, I mean, besides being arrested in 1991 at a club that was raided and then a speeding ticket the same year before the murder, they pulled the files to see what the make and model of the vehicle was on his ticket back in 1991, and it was a white Toyota coupe, so that they then were able to you know, deduce that he was driving this car, and that was the car that people had seen outside of Christie's house. So there are some speculations. It is believed that Christy and Raymond may have met that night out that she went out in the days leading up to her death. But
do they know the motive?
That's the thing. But I mean, besides being charged and admitted to the crime, Raymond has refused to give any other detail about motive or how the two even met at all.
He admitted it?
He admitted it.
Wow.
One disturbing.
But he won't say why.
He won't say why. Which is really upsetting because, you know.
Was she like a pretty girl?
She was pretty, yeah. I mean, yeah. What difference does that make?
I don't know. Just curious. Just trying to put a face.
Like, he'd have more sympathy?
No, like, was it like a lust thing? Like, right. Was it like, oh, wow, she's so really pretty. Like, I want her.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to show up. She's going to accept me. And then it didn't work out. And I'm going to bust out a cutting board.
That is really only information that Christy and Raymond know because they.
Well, we need to interview him.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he'll come forward one day and his conscience will, you know, be bothering him that he has more information because it's just sad. I mean, at least, you know, there is justice for Christy and her family. But one final disturbing fact about this case is that on the day of the murder, Raymond went home to his fiance and snuck in bed with her right after killing Christy. And they got married a few months later. And that would be his second of four wives that he was with.
He's had four wives?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously he has some issues.
Clearly. He killed someone.
Yeah. And all these women probably feel guilty a bit, right? I mean, wouldn't you feel guilty if you found out I was a murderer?
But that's, yeah. I mean, especially, you know? Like, there are interviews of this.
Like, was he abusive or something? Or probably. Fuck, to be able to kill someone with a cutting board. Like, we can only assume if he was a DJ, like, you know, I mean, socially. But they were never together. So, yeah, like, that's nothing real deep emotional connection. That's just more of, like...
It's just one of those murders that are just so random and unusual that there really hasn't, you know, been...
I wonder if he murdered other people and they just don't know.
Well, I would suspect they would because they test DNA at murder scenes and it would have matched with
DNA, like, it could be. Get better at it.
From maybe even years before that. Who knows? But this is just such a random
Dexter. I mean, fuck, he killed so many people and he just knew what to do. You would know what to do.
There's actually a Dexter criminal murderer that, like, tried to use Dexter as...
Wow, that's scary.
Yeah.
Could that show be liable?
Questions I shall ask the interwebs.
It's basically like an education on how to kill people, that show.
Terrible.
And get away with it.
Mm-hmm. Dexter's a good show, though.
It is awesome.
Anyways, that is our episode for week one of Crime Poppers. And I hope you guys enjoyed listening. And we will leave all of the sources, information, photos in the show notes, which you can also view on our website at crimepoppers.com.
Don't kill your neighbors.
We shall see you next week.
Take care.